Strom speaking. This tape will be an account of the experiences of a Holden registrar. I was the registrar at Holden from the summer of 1969 through the summer of 1980. But my experiences at Holden began in 1966. I was a good friend of Ardell Eyricks in Minneapolis and also of Shirley Lilliscove, both of whom had been to Holden before. Ardell invited me to go along with her on a group of young adults to spend a week at Holden in August of 1969, and I decided I would go. This was the week of the Stehekin, which was an annual event in those early years. It was a special week for young adults. It was called Stehekin because Stehekin means the way through, after, of course, the community of Stehekin. It was a wonderful week. One that turns out to have changed my entire life. Norman Hobble was on the faculty that week giving lectures on the Old Testament, and he was simply fascinating. Rudy Edmund was there, the geologist, who has been there every summer since the village began, I think. Carol Hinderly was not there that week, so I wasn't to meet him until later. But his presence was very much felt in the village. He was a great favorite among the staff, and everyone talked about him, and everyone missed him a great deal. Before the week was over, I had made a decision to come back to the village that fall as a volunteer, and Werner assured me that they needed plenty of help after the summer was over. So another friend and I, who had driven out together, drove back to Minneapolis nonstop, driving straight through. I went into work the next day and gave 2 weeks' notice. And within 12 days, I was driving back to Holden in Shirley Lilliscove's car, arriving there in early September. And I spent about 6 weeks there as a volunteer. It was an absolutely wonderful time for me. I felt a freedom that I had never felt before. The staff was very small, and we all had to pitch in doing various and sundry different kinds of jobs. I met Fern Olson, who was the head housekeeper and the village hostess, so to speak, at that time. She had been spending summers at Holden for 2 or 3 years already then. She was that year the district president of the ALCW. And one of the groups that came in that fall for a retreat was the ALCW group, and we had to get the village in shape for those ladies. Carol Hinderly, of course, by then was also in residence, and I met him and began a very wonderful long friendship with Carol, especially after our first Scrabble game when I managed to beat him. And from then on, I think I earned his respect, and we played Scrabble together many, many, many sunny afternoons sitting on his porch, on the porch of Chalet 9. Terry Saturin was also in the village, another great Scrabble player, and I became good friends with Terry. He was a year-round volunteer at Holden for many of those early years, sometimes being there all by himself in the winter. Karen Bugge was the village secretary. Sharon Wangsness was the village nurse, now Sharon Kidd, and she and I are still very close friends. Sharon and Shirley Lilliscove and I left in the middle of October and drove back to Iowa via Seattle, Victoria, Portland, Los Angeles, the Grand Canyon, and Denver. We had a wonderful trip back together. My next visit to Holden came in the summer of 1968. I had made the decision to go back to graduate school in the business school at the University of Minnesota, and I had about a 6-week break between quitting my job and starting school. So I went back out to Holden for a month as a volunteer in the summer. Many of my old friends were still there. Ardell Eirich was there. Fern Olson, of course, was there. And I worked on the housekeeping crew with Fern. Turned out that my work in housekeeping was to do me in good stead as a registrar, because I always remembered what the burdens were on the housekeepers and what kind of an impact registration decisions had on housekeeping. So it was a good experience. Judy Johnson, and still a longtime friend, was also there that summer. Margaret Felt was the village nurse. She also became a very good friend later on. Before I left that fall, I made the decision to go back to Holden for Christmas. As you can see, the village was beginning to creep into my life. It was beginning to have effect on me. It's very hard to stay away. Went back to Minneapolis and was in grad school for that fall. And then went back to Holden for Christmas. It was a wonderful Christmas. It was one of the first years that Holden had really any guests for Christmas. We were all in Koinonia. Chalet 1 was opened up. The Gilling family came. They were to spend many Christmases at Holden. I think probably 10 or 12 years they came to Holden for Christmas every year. Terry Saturin was still there. Werner and Judy had been married Werner and Judy were married the summer of 1966. And this was 69, Christmas of 68. So they've been married a couple of years. Ruth and Joe Walmer were there, and Joe and I became good buddies playing cribbage together. Horty and Mary Christman were there. It was a very close-knit community there at Christmas time. And I spent about 2.5 weeks there and was able to help out. Even though I was a guest, I did a lot of helping out in the kitchen. It was just wonderful fun to be in the Koinonia kitchen cooking for that group. For Christmas that year, we had around 50 people in the village. About 20 were staff and 25 or 30 guests. We were quite filled up with that group, just in Koinonia and Chalet 1 and Chalet 14. Right after Christmas, we expected another group to come in, a group of Luther Leaguers. The temperature dipped down to 28 below zero, and we got a message on the radio that they would not be coming, to our great relief. Before I went back to Minneapolis, I had approached Werner about coming back to Holden for a year sabbatical. And he was very positive about it. When I got back to Minneapolis, I went to see Carol and Mary and asked Carol if it would be all right if I would come and spend a year at Holden. And he indicated that they would be delighted to have me. So after the next quarter at the university, in April, I left to go back to the village. Harv and Jean Wingy were slated to be registrars that summer. Jean became pregnant and was expecting. So Werner was very happy to have me on hand to help Harv with registration when Jean would be gone. So that first summer, I worked with Harv Wingy in registration. By then, the registration office had been removed from the dining hall and had been moved down to Koinonia. So when the buses came, people got off the bus down on the road, and we either brought them right into lunch or we went into Koinonia. And I must say, that first year, I hadn't really learned very much about greeting people properly. It was hard to realize, especially then, people were sometimes very apprehensive about what to expect at the village, and a warm and friendly greeting right away, I realized how important that was. And how important it was to make people realize that yes, they did have a room to stay in, that yes, they were being expected, that yes, it was going to be a good week for them. Of course, at that time, many people came that weren't expected. And that summer of 69, we did fill the village up a couple of times. But it was our policy never to turn anybody down. And whoever came up on the bus, we would always find a place, some place to stay. Carol always maintained that, if nothing else, staff people would leave their rooms and sleep on the lawns, happily sleep on the lawns and let a guest stay in their room. I think there were times when the staff people weren't so happy about being kicked out of the rooms. But we didn't have to do that. We never really had to ask anyone to sleep on the lawn. But I do remember those first two summers. There were times when we did ask staff people to vacate their rooms and go and sleep somewhere else to make room for guests. We had one large group of women, women's clubs or something like that, that was supposed to be there 1 week, and we vacated one whole floor of Lodge 1 for those women, and all of those girls went and stayed with friends or in the hospital or who knows where. On one occasion, I gave up my room and put bunk beds in it, and four Luther Leaguers stayed in my room for a week. I went and slept in the hospital living room on the floor. So the registration was rather chaotic at times because we never really knew who was coming, and we never really were sure that we'd have a room for everyone. We used to wonder what it would be like if when people had to make reservations a year in advance, never really dreaming that would ever happen, which of course is the case now. Phyllis Anderson was the secretary at that time, and she had her office in Chelan. She took care of all the correspondence, and she took care of answering reservations and confirming reservations, and then she would send the cards on up to me so that I would know who to expect, at least have some idea of who to expect. I was able to persuade Werner, I think by the winter of 1970, that it would be better for us to handle that correspondence up at Holden. And since we had a more permanent staff, we were in a better position to do that. Of course, we were always hampered because we never had a telephone. So we could never telephone people to confirm that they were coming, or they could not telephone us. And again, we always had the policy that no one who came, who got off the bus, would be sent back down the hill. At one time during a pastor's conference, when the village really was literally filled to the rafters, a young couple with a baby came up unexpectedly, and Carol announced in the dining hall that, although it was our policy never to send anyone back that came up on the bus, in this case we were absolutely full and we would have to ask this couple to go back down. And immediately, several volunteers came up to the podium and volunteered to give up their rooms so that this couple could stay, and it turned out we were able to work it out. Of course, when people volunteered to give up their rooms, that didn't really help because there was no place else to give them to sleep. But I found that people were, for the most part, very flexible and very willing to go along with the spirit of hospitality that really embodied the village. One of the groups which used the village during those early years, from probably about 1964 or 1965 through the early 70s, was the CFO group, which is for Camp Farthest Out. This is an interdenominational Christian retreat movement, and they hold camps all over the country. They did at that time. And they came to the village early June every year and use the facilities with their own program. Holden was very grateful for this group. Werner told me there were many early years we would not have been able to pay our bills had it not been for the CFO. Their program was different every year because they had different leaders. Some of them tended to be very charismatic and rather extreme for Lutherans, and other years the leaders were very much they fit in very well. In fact, they invited Carol to be one of their retreat leaders one of the years. One of the women one year was Ruth Carter Stapleton, Jimmy Carter's sister. I remember her very well. She was a very dynamic, charming person. The CFO were great fun. They had what they called devotions in motion every morning in the dining hall, or rather in the village center. And some of the staffers used to go down there, and they'd do calisthenics while singing hymns and sort of mixed together spirituality and exercise, which was great fun. Some of the those CFO participants continued to come to Holden. They truly loved Holden. And I remember Esther and Lloyd Peterson on the organ and the piano were a great duo. They were the accompanists, and they've been coming to Holden in recent years and in the fall as volunteers during when there are a lot of retired people there. During the summers, up until about 1975 or 76, we allowed one or two youth groups to be in the village every week. We tried to limit them to 30 so that Holden wouldn't be overwhelmed by Luther League age youth. But there were many, many Luther League groups that were anxious to come to the village, and Holden really needed them in those early years. We needed to have our registration filled up. And they provided a flavor to the village that was fun, even though we always felt that Holden was much more suited as an adult retreat. And the program continued to be geared for adult and for mature youth that were willing to sit in discussions and be involved in the problems of the world and of society. Many of the youth groups were not prepared for this kind of an experience. They all, without question, loved the village. They adored being there. I don't blame them because they had a great deal of freedom. The village always had only one rule, and that was that everyone was to attend Vespers. And we always felt that if the village was together as a community in worship, then other disciplinary problems and other things would fall into place, and we would not have those. Of course, there were some youth groups that did not respond as we hoped they would. But by and large, we had a good experience with youth. And it was in the later 70s that we decided to eliminate youth groups per se, to encourage youth to come to Holden with their parents, and to encourage parishes, rather than just bring a group of youth, to bring groups of families. And this turned out, we got a great response. And now Holden has many family groups that come from churches from Minnesota and California, Washington. Those are the main states they come from. The winters were always very special for me. In fact, the first few years I was there, I always looked forward to winter. I enjoyed having the quietness and less hubbub and commotion and more of a routine to the daily living. After 3 or 4 years, however, I began to realize that I really looked forward to summers. And by then I was beginning to know the people that came back year after year, and I really felt like I was a part of the village. I never, in my wildest dreams, thought I would stay there 11 years. After the first year, I was given a salary or a stipend, and my departure date became rather open-ended. I never really did say how long I wanted to stay. When spring came, we always counted on the road being open by the 15th of May. And it usually was. A couple of years we had to use the cat to get it open. But by mid-May, we were able to accept larger groups to come up. And we usually had some youth and other young people's groups that came and used the village in May. One of these was from a high school in Portland. A teacher from this school had been a Holden volunteer, and it was sort of an alternative high school. They had some innovative programs there, and this person wanted to bring some of his high school students to the village to experience a wilderness experience. Many of these kids were inner city kids, had never been out in the country, out in the woods, and they came to the village, and we had a fabulous experience with them. They responded to Holden in a beautiful way. Many of them were black, inner city kids. They'd never been in a setting like that before. They were always, of course, rather suspicious of the village when they first arrived, but after 3 days, Holden worked its magic on them all. And some of them gave testimonials before they left that were very moving. Almost every year they sent back a scrapbook with poems that some of them had written and pictures they'd drawn and letters describing what a wonderful time they'd had. This group of young people came and used the village at least 3 or 4 years. One of the years when they came, we also had a group, a non-Lutheran group that wanted to use Holden for, it was the Washington State Community College student governments. And these were student government leaders from all of the community colleges in Washington State. They came up for a conference that they were having, and they were quite different. They were all business. They were taking life very seriously. I remember their leader, when he got off the bus, the first thing he said to me was, "Now don't be sure and don't let anybody know what wonderful hiking there is here and how beautiful it is out in the country, because once if anybody finds out, you know, how neat it is, we'll never get him in any of the meetings." And my first thought was, "Well, why in the world did you come up here if you're not interested in the out of doors?" They had their plenary session lasting all night in the village center. They had a office set up over in the museum with typewriters, and they were typing bulletins and making copies of things, and they really were into this student government business. But I was rather nervous about how these two groups were going to mix. In the first place, I was nervous about the student group. These were the years of student protests, and I didn't know what might happen with this group of kids up there. At any rate, the first night they were all there together. In the middle of the night, about 1 a.m., we were all awakened by this dreadful sound over the PA system from the village center. And my first thought was, "Oh no, here it is, we're going to have a riot." Well, we leaped out of bed, and Werner rushed down to the village center, and the leaders of the high school group jumped up wondering what was going on. Turned out that all it was, the college group was in the village center, and one of them had decided to play the organ, inadvertently flipped on the switch for the outside speakers. We found out very quickly nothing was amiss, and we all went back to bed, but it was rather a scary time. Then the youth leaders of the LCA decided that Holden would be a good place to hold spring youth conferences, and we were agreeable to that. So we had LCA youth coming to Holden in May for youth conferences. The second year that these were to occur, we expected around 150 youth, as we had been told that's what we should expect, and that's what we'd had the year before. And 1 week before the conference was to begin, we received a message in the mail that the registration was 475. I just about fainted when I got the notice. I raced upstairs to the kitchen. Paul Hinderly was our cook at the time in the kitchen, and informed him that we were getting 475 youth rather than the 150 that were expected. And somehow or other, we pulled it off. We managed to contact the boat company. Maybe we had more than a week's notice. We might have had about 10 days' notice, but I know it wasn't very much. Paul was able to get in orders for extra provisions. We got the boat company to schedule extra boat trips because, of course, there was no way that, well, their biggest boat held 150 people and the Speedway held 75. So at best, the Speedway would make 3 trips and the Lady of the Lake would make 1, I believe was how it worked out. And somehow or other, we managed to have those youth they were in the village 2 nights. And some of the kids didn't get there till Saturday night, about 6 o'clock, and they all had to start leaving at 7 a.m. on Sunday morning. It really hardly seemed worth it to have that many kids there, try to get that many kids in and out of Holden. After that, we were able to persuade the LCA youth department that they should split their group up into more manageable size, which they did. And now I believe they're still coming to the village for their youth conferences, but they've split it up into 2 or 3 weekends so that not more than 150 or 200 would be there at any one time. We had plenty of problems during the winters. We had 2 of the Swedish snow tracks which were great vehicles, but they really couldn't stand the kind of wear that we were giving them, and there were frequent breakdowns on the road. And of course, we had no communication, so if the snow track broke down, or if both the snow tracks were down on the road and they had a breakdown, we had no way of knowing that. Or more of a problem were snow slides on the road. Many times the track would go down to meet the boat in the morning. In the meantime, a snow slide would come across the road and they would be stuck on the other side, and we had no way of knowing this either. One of the worst ones was we had a group of about 30 young people coming in for a weekend in April, and they were not prepared for snow. It was down in Chelan and out in Seattle and Portland where they were from. It was springtime. So these kids had no idea that we still were in the throes of winter. And the snow slide came down at Old Faithful at about 4 Mile, and we were up at the village waiting and waiting for our expected guests to come, knowing something had gone wrong. And finally, about 4:30, we could see about three people walking into the village through the gloom. And then we got the story. There had been a huge slide, and the whole group was walking up to Holden. Many of these kids had sneakers on. One of their pastors, who was a retired pastor, was walking in street shoes, and it was quite an experience for them. They had a 7-mile walk. The last of them made it to the village about 8:30 or 9 o'clock that night. Then, of course, we had to get the snow slide cleared. I think one of the vehicles broke down that weekend, too, and we had to get that whole group out of there 2 days later. It was really a challenge. Somehow or other, we managed it. But when there was a slide on the road, we just organized work parties, and 7 or 10 people would go down in the morning and shovel till noon, and then they would be relieved by a new group at noon. It was really something. Those snow slides, if they'd occurred in Stevens Pass or Snoqualmie Pass, you know, would have had big bulldozers clearing them out. But here we were with our little shovels, shoveling away. It's a wonder that no one was ever hurt or injured seriously during those years. Of course, we still have snow slides on the road, but now Holden has better snow removal equipment. Holden also began a group home project. Oh, I believe it was maybe in 1970. We were approached by the state of Washington as a possible place for a group home for boys who needed to have an environment away from their homes. We never felt that we could take boys that were in serious trouble, but we felt that we could maybe be of some help to boys who didn't get along in school or didn't get along with their families. I remember being extremely apprehensive about this. I had not ever had a relationship with teenage boys, and I was very nervous about it. But some of the friendships I made with those boys turned out to be very, very special. They had their problems, and they were very frustrating at times to have around the village. But I hope to think that we made some impact on their lives, and I know we had a good impact on some of their lives. To be in an environment that was loving and accepting, and they were able to stay at least out of some kinds of trouble, even if they got into other kinds of trouble at the village. Mary and Horty Chrisman were wonderful house parents. During those years, they really cared and loved those boys in a special way. I remember Mary saying, after one day when we were complaining about the boys, that she never knew any teenagers that didn't have some kind of problems. Ernie Zorb came up to the village by himself the first summer. He was an old classmate of Carol's and a very good friend. And Carol had invited him to come up and spend a summer as a naturalist and doing whatever Ernie does. And we all had a great time with him. And the next year, he brought along his wife, Pearl. Pearl was one of my very, very special friends during all the years that I was at Holden. She worked in the office as bookkeeper, and she and I were very close. We went on walks together every day to 10 Mile Falls, and we went to the snack bar every day for our ice cream cones, and we spent many hours together doing cross-stitch and hardanger embroidery. Every year in May, when Ernie and Pearl would roll into the village, it was a red-letter day for me. Ernie made an enormous contribution to Holden, and of course, so did Pearl. Ernie set up and ran the sawmill for two or three summers, which was extremely difficult work and was a terribly important function for Holden. We were able to remodel buildings with our own lumber. I never tired of going up there and watching Ernie run that sawmill. It was fascinating to me. I guess I never really realized how boards were how wood lumber was created before. I always knew it came from trees, but I never really knew what the process was. If you went on a hike with Ernie, it was pretty well understood that you would get stuck brushing trail sometime or another. My first trip to Dole Lake was with Ernie, and we ended up spending a couple of hours clearing part of the trail and scaling a cliff, and I was pretty much terrified. One summer, we persuaded Pearl to go along on an overnight, and we went up to 10 Mile Basin, and on that trip, of course, ended up clearing trail for about a half a mile or so. But we had a wonderful time. Ernie was famous for his sourdough pancakes and schnazzle berries. And of course, he was an avid fisherman and a wonderful naturalist. He had a collection of flower slides that are unparalleled. They were beautiful pictures of the flowers all over the area. His faithful dog, Chaos, accompanied him on all his trips. He made many trips to Dole Lake fishing and took a lot of people up there and showed a lot of people an appreciation of the wilderness and the woods. One of the groups I must make some mention of, which used the village, I believe, at least 2 years, maybe 3 years, was an Air Force group. One winter, an Air Force colonel and his aide had written to Werner and made inquiries about the possibilities of using Holden for a retreat. And they came up in the middle of the winter to check out the village and to discuss the feasibility of this. It was one of those times when the vehicle broke down. I believe there was a snow slide, just a typical trip up from the lake. And this colonel and his aide finally made it up to the village. That night, the vehicle had broken down, and they had to leave again the next day, so that our two mechanics, Doug Spanny was in the village then, he was the mechanic, Terry Saturn was there, he was sort of a jack of all trades, but he was able to repair the snow tracks when necessary, and I think Joe Walmer was in the village that winter, he was our mechanic, also a mechanic. The three of them were up in the garage repairing the snow track. The colonel's aide turned out to be a baker, and he moved into the Koinonia kitchen and proceeded to bake two great big pans of cinnamon rolls. And when the workers came down about midnight from repairing the vehicles, here were these piping hot cinnamon rolls, and we all sat around Koinonia eating cinnamon rolls at midnight. I'm sure those Air Force people have never forgotten it. At any rate, they deemed that the village would be appropriate for an Air Force retreat, a family retreat, sponsored by the chaplaincy. and they came to Holden the following August. It was a group of about 300, as I recall. They were all families. There was an advance team that came up to make arrangements, and they were very, very by the book. There were certain rules that had to be adhered to. They weren't sure if they wanted their people hiking up to Heart Lake. They didn't quite approve of this. They had an ambulance on call at 25 Mile Creek during the entire week in case there would be an emergency. But those families had a wonderful week at Holden, I think. Again, it was one of those situations where the boats had to run all day long to get everyone there. And the last group didn't make it into the village until about 11 p.m. Jean Geringer was in the kitchen at those years, and she was always ready with a wonderful hot meal no matter what time people arrived. And when those families rolled in at 11 o'clock at night, we were ready for them. We had a wonderful hot meal in the dining hall. Their rooms were ready. One of the families had about five or six small children, and I think we succeeded in extending our hospitality on that occasion to make them feel welcome and feel at home. I always appreciated the kitchen staff being willing to extend themselves to provide hospitality. One of the most important things I always felt was to have nourishing food and a hot meal ready for people when they arrived, especially during the winter. And Jean Geringer always had a hot stew or a hot soup, and people sometimes wouldn't get into the village till 2:30 or 3 o'clock after a rather arduous trip up the mountain. And she always had that hot meal ready for them in the dining hall and always made people feel welcome. And the kitchen was very, very responsive to the needs of registration. We managed to work it out together usually if there were people coming at odd hours or more people coming than we expected or whatever the emergency was, they were always able to rise to the occasion. By 1973 and 1974, it became very evident that we could no longer follow the policy of just being able to accept anyone that wanted to come to Holden. We had to begin to plan and to project what the village population would be and to have some kind of a system for regulating registration, much as I hated to do that. So I began to devise charts to project how many people had reservations, and we tried to steer people away from certain times when we knew we would be very filled. We still managed to fill the village up to bursting many times. In 1973, I left for 3 weeks for vacation to see the solar eclipse in Africa. Janice Wick was at the village then as my registration assistant. She took over registration. And I think that year, on the 4th of July, we probably had the biggest crowd that Holden had ever accommodated, around 500 people. There are stories that sometimes we had 550 or 500 or 450. When the village became that full, it was really pretty hard to tell exactly how many people were there anyway. We considered our capacity to be somewhere around 400 to 420. There were many times when we accommodated 450, I'm sure. I'm not sure that we ever really slept 500. Even though we had to control our registration and turn many people away, we always remained open to a person that had a real need. If a pastor would write to us about a parishioner of his or hers that had a special need to get away, we always made room for someone like that. We felt that the Holden had to be available to people who had some special needs. And at times it may have seemed unfair, but I hope that Holden will always be responsive in this way. Every once in a while, I would write to someone that was on a waiting list and to let them know that we had room for them and that we could confirm their reservations. And I would get a letter back just full of gratitude, and the people were so happy that they could come, and they would say they've been praying about this. It always made you feel a little uncomfortable that by denying people the their wishes to come to Holden, I was defying the will of God. One of the challenges that I took upon myself was to try to make people as at ease as possible as soon as they arrived in the village. I think Holden embodies hospitality to a lot of people, and there are many things that make that happen. Sometimes people didn't really know what to expect when they got off the bus. They had this long, arduous boat ride and this trip up the mountainside, and religious retreats tend to make people uneasy if they don't know quite what to expect. They're not sure just what's going to hit them when they get off that bus. So one of the first things we always tried to do, we made sure that they knew where their room was going to be right away, and if there was room for them, they went right to their room before dinner, and were assured that they were going to be comfortable and well cared for. One particular family that came from Chicago, they were planning to be in the village for 10 days, and it just happened that week there was accommodations and a chalet available, Chalet 9, the upstairs that had been newly remodeled. This family had two small children, and I thought that would be a really super place for them to be able to stay. They would have the use of a chalet, and it had a beautiful view. They had their own bathroom. I thought they'd be very comfortable. As I mentioned, it had been newly remodeled, and there was a little painting that still needed to be done, but it was clean, and maybe it looked a little rough. At any rate, I gave them the room assignment when they got off the bus. And before the buses had left, I was still in the bus area. The lady was back to see me, and she was crying. She was just distraught. She said they'd been on this train ride for 3 days and nights, and they were exhausted, and their room was just terrible. It wasn't even finished, and they just didn't know what they were going to do. And I felt terrible. I threw my arms around her and consoled her and patted her head and told her not to worry. Everything was going to be all right. We'd give them another room, and I moved them down to Koinonia to a small room with four bunks, which they had to share, and they thought that was wonderful. They were perfectly happy to be there. Before the boat company built their new boat, the New Lady of the Lake, which holds 300 people, the two boats that were available for transportation were the Old Lady for 150 and the Speedway for 75. And the last 2 years before the new boat was put into service was really a challenge to get everyone in and out of both Stehekin and Holden. The boat company was pretty cooperative as much as they could be and still operate legally within the limits of their capacities. But during August, those 2 years, there were many times when the boat company would decide they had to make an extra trip in order to get everyone out or get everyone in. And I would have to round up 50 or 60 or 75 people at a moment's notice to leave the village by 11 o'clock so that they could run the speedway with two trips. And this involved rounding up people that were together, getting groups together that were on buses, contacting bus drivers from the outside to come and meet their group early, making sure that people had transportation to Chelan if their cars were at 25 Mile Creek. It was really a challenge. But somehow we always managed to get everyone in and out that had to leave or to get there. One of the privileges of the registrar was introducing new people at Vespers. And I always enjoyed this a great deal. It was to be very special to me to name people's names, and very important to have people introduced by name and have their names spoken. I suppose I read off literally thousands of names in the 11 years that I was there. Sometime I would like to see a mural of all the names of the people that have been at the village. Just names written all over on a big mural. We always especially enjoyed finding out when former miners returned. There were many times when person that had worked in the Holden mine would come up for a week or a weekend just to see what it was like, and people were always very interested in finding out who they were and in talking to them and hearing about what life was like at Holden during the mining days. The people that used to work at Holden have a reunion every summer in Chelan. And the year of the 20th anniversary of the closing of the mine, Nigel Adams organized a special reunion and picnic at Holden. We invited all of the former miners and their families to be our guests at a picnic lunch. And the boat company provided transportation for them. They left Chelan early in the morning. They arrived at Holden about 11 a.m. There are around 250 people involved in this day. We had 400 of our own guests, and the kitchen put on a sumptuous picnic lunch outdoors. It was a hot, hot August day, just a beautiful day. And we had barbecued chicken and corn on the cob and mashed potatoes and gravy and dessert and salad. It was a wonderful picnic. We had received many letters back from the people that came expressing their joy and appreciation at the hospitality they received, and also they were so happy that Holden was being cared for, that it wasn't just a ruin with a bunch of broken down buildings, that someone was living there and using it. I think as a mine, Holden was a unique kind of a place for a mine location. People that lived there really got a feeling for the place and for the area, I'm sure more so than any other mining location in the country. The September weekend retreats were really a joy too. September, things slowed down a little bit and weren't quite as hectic, and there was more time to sit around and visit with people, and the pace was just slower. This is when retired persons, we tried to encourage retired groups and retired people to come and use the village, and especially a lot of retired staff that came year after year. John and Lorraine Gear, and Bill and Doris Dirks, and Wally and Marion Johnson, just to name a few. I can't begin to name all of these delightful couples and single people. One lady came who was over 80 and worked in the gardening. She was just incredible. Carol tried to promote these weekends, especially for Northwest congregations to come and see that what they had right in their own district that was available for them. Now, one year, he sent out a postcard to all of the congregations in the Northwest offering Holden for a September weekend for $5 a person. And we had a tremendous response to this invitation. Many, many people came and could hardly believe it when they were told, even though they had received the publicity, that all they owed us was $5 for the weekend. Carol was great at doing things like this for people, really on impulse, and it gave Holden a special quality. Leo Busted was usually on hand for at least one of these September weekends with his own special presentations and his own unique personality. Then we had pastors' conferences almost every year in September. Pastors would come for their yearly pastors' conference. Usually the LCA was the group that came most frequently. We didn't really have room for all of the ALC pastors, although they did use the village too. This was a good opportunity to show pastors what the facility was like, and again, to promote the use of the village for congregational retreats. Then the Lutheran Institute for Theological Education out of PLU sponsored some very large pastors' conferences. And these were also held at Holden. The first of these, the guest speaker was Helmut Thielicke, who of course was a big drawing card. And we had the village packed full with about 350 pastors and their wives. That particular year, the first year, we had a beautiful week, typical gorgeous September weather. And Omar Klein, our very faithful village gardener, collected all of the geraniums from the village and placed them in the village center, all over the balcony and around the altar area. It just looked like a garden. It was just gorgeous. Big challenge for the registrar that week, well, first of all, was housing everyone. But the second real challenge was arranging transportation for everyone to get in and out when they needed to. The boat company by this time was on a three days a week schedule. And of course there were always those that had to be come in or leave on a Tuesday or a Thursday. They could not leave their work behind them. Many of the reasons were, of course, legitimate. Some pastors had funerals they had to conduct, or they had other business they had to do, and they couldn't stay away for a whole week for a retreat. So arranging transportation and getting charters and making sure boats weren't overloaded was the big challenge. The winter program developed considerably through all these years also. One of the first winter projects we had was establishment of a group home through the State of Washington Department of Health and Social Services. They felt that Holden would be a good environment for young boys that needed some special attention, weren't getting along well in school, or didn't get along well with their families and were in some trouble. So we agreed to take up to 6 boys in a group home setting. It was quite an experience. I was extremely apprehensive at the beginning of this program. I didn't know really what to expect. I didn't feel very comfortable around teenage boys at all, and we just didn't know what it was going to be like. We had our problems with these boys, and many of them were not able to stay. They had to leave because they couldn't adapt to the Holden freedom, mostly. But we did develop really special relationships with many of them, and it was a great lesson for me about learning how to get along with young people. I like to think that Holden did have some impact on many of their lives, even though maybe some of it we couldn't see while they were there. Then we had the Lifestyle Enrichment Program, which was introduced. And John Grauber directed this program for a number of years. It was very successful. We had a group of college-age students there for the whole year for the purpose of study and reflection and reading great books and discussing them, Bible study. It was a very intense program. These young people worked very hard. John and Carol expected a lot of them, but they all considered it a really great experience in their lives. The Lifestyle Enrichment Program was replaced by the Holden Winter Program when John Schramm came. And this was not quite as intense. It was shorter. We introduced 2 10-week sessions each winter and opened it up to anyone who wanted to come and just spend time at the village and not be involved totally in volunteer work. They did serve part-time as volunteers to help with village chores, but primarily they were involved in Bible study and book discussions and other special tutorials or craft projects, and just being a part of the village community, which is, the winter community is a very close-knit group, and it's a really great experience to be in a community like this through the winter. We had many village projects that were carried out during the winter, which could not be done in summertime, remodeling buildings and doing maintenance, things of this sort, painting, could not be done when villages were full of buildings. One of our big winter projects was doing mailings, mass mailings. We usually had 2 big mailings, one in the fall and one in the spring. And at this point, Dorothy Carroll has got to be mentioned as the Holden Saint, Saint Dorothy. She was a retired lady from Spokane who had worked all her life in office work and loved to do office work and was very organized. And she organized the Holden mailing list. She literally maintained it and set it up in the beginning and spent hours and hours and hours making changes of address and sorting envelopes and bundling mailings and organizing mailings. She and I were a pretty good team putting mailings together. We had our own offset press, and we printed all the materials ourselves. We had a folding machine. When it was time to do a mailing, we would spread out everything in the dining hall. The whole village would sit down and stuff envelopes and bundle up letters and ship them out. The mailing list at that time was about 12,000. now Holden has a computer, the mailing list has grown to close to 18,000. And it's a little more automated, but there's still the involvement of people sitting around stuffing envelopes. It really was a great time for sitting and talking to people, because you really didn't have to think about what you were doing. And we had a lot of fun playing riddle games and doing that. We would not have had a mailing list had it not been for somebody like Dorothy that took such special care in making sure that everything was accurate and done well. Of course, the winter community, by and large, had to provide its own entertainment. And some of the more memorable occasions that I can recall, when Paul Hinderle and Tom Ahlstrom were there, they just provided, they're natural entertainers. And we had crazy songs in the dining hall, and we had Gilbert and Sullivan. And one year, Paul and Tom Ahlstrom had the brilliant inspiration to offer a really night of fine dining, a restaurant night in the dining hall. And we were all asked to put together our parties of three or four or five or six, and we had to make advance reservations with the maitre d', who of course was Tom. Everyone was accounted for, everyone made their reservations, and they had two or three settings. So the people with young children could come early, and the people that wanted to dine later, more leisurely, could come later. Everyone dressed up in their finest, and when we arrived in the dining hall, it was absolutely transformed into a very posh, beautiful restaurant. The lights were dim, there was soft music playing, there were tablecloths on the tables and candles, there were waiters and waitresses waiting on us. We were seated at the tables, we were given a huge, enormous, oversized menu with our choice of entrees. It was, I don't remember exactly what the dishes were, but one was, I think, a special barbecued ribs, one was coq au vin, one was, I don't remember the other ones, but we could choose what we wanted from the menu. And the dessert was a flaming, one of the desserts they offered was a flaming flambé, Cherry's Jubilee flambé, and it was absolutely incredible how that dining hall at Holden was transported into a gorgeous, posh restaurant. And of course, the most incredible part of it all was that when the meal was over, there was no check. We didn't have to pay for it. And some of us did tip our waiters for fun. One of these restaurants that they put on, they ended up doing this about twice a year. One of them was a French restaurant, and on that night, four of the Lifestyle Enrichment students came as American tourists, made themselves totally obnoxious. We had a great deal of fun. Then we also had hamburger joint, truck stop restaurant, and the waitresses chewing gum and wearing too much makeup, and Stan Stevenson and Paul back in the kitchen shouting out orders and serving all kinds of outrageous hamburgers. That was a lot of fun too. During the winter, we went to a two-meal schedule on Sundays so that our Sundays could be a little more leisurely. And we always had our wonderful Sunday dinner about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we would go to Koinonia and celebrate the Eucharist, have worship. And after worship, we would come back for dessert. And then there was always some entertainment during dessert. And the village entertainment was absolutely superb. The amount of talent that was there and the amount of fun we had together, just providing for our own entertainment, was just unbelievable. Then, of course, we had special musical events. We had one-act plays. People had the opportunity at Holden to act in a play that had never been on the stage or never done any acting of any kind. And I always thought that was a very special opportunity. And the audiences at Holden were so responsive that you could always bring out the best in everyone. I'm convinced this is why the entertainment was such high quality and so superb, because the audiences were always there just pulling pulling for the people and giving encouragement and applauding and cheering. And it's a two-way street. I always think about that when I go to a professional performance of any kind. The audience really makes it. One winter, when we had a group of college students for January interim, it was a group from Illinois. I can't remember the name of the college. And their professor was the music professor from that college. And I had written him ahead of time and asked him if he would bring along an easy Bach cantata or something that we could do as a village while they were there. So he brought along some music, and we were working on a Bach cantata that we were going to present. The day that we were to do this, there were massive snow slides on the road. Somebody came walking back in the village early in the morning and said we needed volunteers to go down and shovel. It was one of the biggest slides we'd ever had. So these college kids really had the week of their lives, the experience I'm sure they've never forgotten. But we sent out teams of people down the road to shovel all day long. And it was raining. It was a scary time. Those of us that were back in the village were very apprehensive. We felt that they were in danger, and I think they really were in danger, because you never knew when another snowslide might not come down on top of the one they were working on. But as it turned out, no one was hurt. They were able to get the road open. And by about 7 o'clock, everyone was back safely. The road was shoveled, no one was hurt. And that evening in Koinonia, we all gathered together and presented a Bach cantata. It was quite a memorable time. The contrast of battling the elements and being all day long in this sort of state of apprehension and worry, and then to be able to set it all aside in this beautiful Koinonia setting with the fire going, to be singing this wonderful Bach music, was something I'll never forget. I suppose I'll be thinking about more things that I should have added to this tape as the time goes, but it has to end someplace, and I'll just hope that other people that are recording their memories for the oral history of Holden will be able to fill in the gaps where I have left things out.